Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Clutch Conversations. It's your boy Mike back at you one more again live on a Thursday night. It's going down in the clutch tonight. We got both Justin and Ozzy in the building tonight. We're going to get to the show in just a second. But first and foremost, shout out to my lovely wife, Takar. Appreciate everything you do. Appreciate you holding us down. Appreciate all the support. Y'all make sure y'all show some love in the comments as well. And don't stop there. Make sure you show the channel some love as well. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, and Hulk smash that notification bell so you can get notifications each and every time we drop a video here on the channel. Shout out to the Audio Only gang. Audio Only versions of Clutch Conversations are available on all major podcasting platforms. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And when you're checking us out on your favorite podcasting platform, please be sure to follow, rate, and review. It really helps us out. We appreciate the love. We appreciate the support. Speaking of support, if you're involved in this reptile hobby in any shape, form, or fashion, make sure you're supporting US Art and US Art Florida. The link for both organizations are in the description of this video. Definitely spread the word about both these organizations that's helping protect our rights as reptile keepers. And don't stop spreading the word there. Make sure you spread the word about our sponsors. We're going to kick this quick sponsor video and then we'll be right back.
Big dreams start in small towns. Small Town Exotics is a family-run business that specializes in high-quality ball python morphs, western hog noses, and select leopard geckos. They are proud members of US Art, US Art Florida, and the Orient Society. Stay connected with Small Town Exotics on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. Witness their journey as they grow their business and showcase their animals to the world. Thank you, Small Town Exotics, for sponsoring the show.
Art comes in many forms. At Almond's Angels, it comes to life.
Shout out to the homie Shane. Shout out to the homie Jason. Justin, really appreciate the support. Really appreciate the support. Let's see who we got in the chat tonight. Big Sammy, what's good? Appreciate you coming out, bro. Appreciate the love. Stephen Courtney, what's good? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Rock On Reptiles, what's good, big homie? Appreciate the support. Morphic Exotics in the building, what's good, homie? Byron, what's good, bro? Appreciate the support. Sweet Serpents Tampa in the building. Another Florida homie, 352 in the building. Big homie Brian from Heathen Hatchery, what's good? Celtic Reptiles, what's good, fam? Appreciate you coming out. The homie Dundada in the building, what's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. James, what's good? JNS Exotics, appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Static Morphs, what's good? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Chris, what's good? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Jason, what's good? We got sponsor in the building. Appreciate you coming out, brother. Appreciate the support. What's good, man? Freddie, Morph Valley Reptiles in the building. Jersey guys, balls in the building, man. The chat going crazy tonight, man. Y'all like we got some titans of ball python breeding in the house tonight or something. We got over 80 folks in the building right now. Y'all make sure y'all hit that like button. And if you haven't already subscribed, definitely be sure to hit that subscribe button. Another one of the sponsors, the big homie Matt from Ebony and Ivory Reptiles. What's good, homie? Eric's Morph Factory in the building. What's good, fam? Genomic Labs in the building. What's good? Provider Exotics in the building. What's good? The big homie Roe 5.0. What's good? Emilio, what's good, brother? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Kent, what's good, brother? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Dan, what's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Unk, what's good, brother? Stephen Jones, what a more constrictors, man. Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support, man. We had a great talk the other night on the phone, man. We really just kicked it on some real stuff, man. I really appreciate it, man. Appreciate talking to you all the time. Nothing but love, homie. Casey, what's good? Golf's Reptile Creations in the building. Chad, what's good? Herbert, what's good? HB Reptiles in the building. Clutch Conversations alum. Big Matt, what's good? KMB Reptiles, another Clutch Conversations alum. And the big homie Brock from Morphinary Arts, soon to be Clutch Conversations alum. We're going to stop it right there, man. Appreciate y'all coming out. Appreciate the support. We're going to keep the intro and be right back with the show.
Won't you listen to me? I got that flavor. I know you're dying to feed. I ain't no dancer, just got some hip in my feet. Now throw your hands up. Ooh, you bring the lighter. I got the fuse. You make a fire. I'll add the fuel. Follow my lead. Just watch the shoes. Gotta turn the heat up.
Episode 103, Ozzy and Justin. What's up, fellas? How's it going?
What's up, brother?
Hey, Mike. This is awesome, man. Thanks for having us.
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all Very coming. Cool. Appreciate you coming out. Been looking forward to it all week, man. Y'all got the chat going crazy, man. The building is packed tonight.
It's awesome.
That's super cool.
Nice, nice. So how's y'all's weeks going?
Man, I've had two sick teammates this week. So Summer and Rob were both have COVID. Ooh. So they're on the mend, but I've been doing their jobs all week. So it's been a busy one, but I enjoy it. It's fun to get my hands dirty again too. So
nice. Yeah, right? Yeah. You stop doing it, you miss it.
You
jump right back in your stride, or you're taking a little bit longer than you used to take?
I definitely take longer. I'm not as efficient anymore, but I just enjoy it a little bit more. I think I can take it a little slower, and I just stress about all the other things I'm not getting done. But yeah.
How about you, Ozzy?
It's been a rough week, man. I sprained my back working out, and man, my back flared up really bad this week, and it's been a good, man, over 10 years since I had any lower back pain. So that was a bummer, but I'm feeling good. I'm back, not 100%, but I'm pretty close.
Oh wow, sorry to hear that. Like lifting, working out, or doing something different, like some cardio type?
Yeah, I was doing some CrossFit type workout, and I think it was. You ever do a 180 jump squat?
I have not.
Yeah, me either. That was the first time doing it. And I think my
genetically, you haven't either yet. Man.
Yeah, kind of pissed off with myself because I felt it, and I just kept working out because I was doing 75 hard, and then man, one day it just got really, really bad. I could barely walk, but I'm feeling much better now. So
is that just like a body weight jump squat where you like go down?
It was just body weight, man. I think the way I was jumping and twisting, I was doing it incorrectly, and I felt a little twinge. And then you heard of 75 hard before, right?
Yeah.
So you got to do two workouts every day, 45 minutes, one outside. So my back was hurting. Instead of me easing off and resting, I just kept going. So
if I tried to tell you,
just knocked me on my ass, and I had to stop. I couldn't finish 75 hard.
Man, I hurt myself like doing random stuff like these days, like just looking to the right, just suddenly.
Yeah, you gotta work on your back, man, and your core, and you know, and stretch. Like, we don't stretch, man, especially when you're working a lot. You know, just you don't take care of yourself.
Those hip flexors, man, they get you.
Oh yeah,
the hip flexors, all of it.
Super tight. Like sitting down at the computer and stuff all the time, like it's super tight.
It's not good. Yeah, not good.
Not at all. I think there was like a study done, like probably about 10, 15 years ago, about like sitting down too much and how it like shortens your lifespan, stuff like that. Yeah. So I try to get up like throughout the day, like my Apple Watch alert me and say, get up. And so I try to be vigilant about doing it, but still sometimes you can just get right into whatever you're doing and you just don't get up. And then before you know it, man, you've been sitting down for hours straight.
You can host this on the treadmill. You just need to put your mic over there and
I can do it.
Yeah,
work on my breathing techniques and all that stuff.
Yeah, I know guys. I have meetings with guys and they're on their treadmills and just walking talking. I'm sure you've seen it too, Justin. Like, you know, there's ways to get your steps in, man. You just got to get creative. But I've been geeking out on the whole health thing, you know, since I quit my job. And it's pretty fascinating, man. Pretty fascinating.
Actually, Dan from Vision Quest messaged me and asked me to ask you about fishing because he said you're a big time fisherman.
I don't know about big time, but yeah, I definitely love the fish, and I love going down there with Dan, fishing the backwaters, man. It's a lot of fun. We just cruise around in the Everglades and over there by the Thousand Islands, and just, you know, catching fish. It's just, yeah, man, I could do that every day.
Yeah, he said it was pretty good. Is that facts or no?
I mean, we caught a few, but yeah, I've been fishing ever since I was a little kid, man, teenager. I love fishing.
Okay. Yeah. I've never been much of a fisherman. I'm not good at it. I only been like a few times, but I wasn't that good. I didn't catch anything. Cool. So, definitely want to get into some market talk with you guys today. And so, like, Isaac, you recently sent out an email maybe a week or two ago, and it was really talking about like the market cycles in the ball python industry. And so you talked about like market birth, market growth, the market boom, market suicide, and then like the market correction. So kind of help level set for those who might not have heard you kind of talk about this. And then let's talk specifically about like some of the cycles and kind of how we've reacted to it.
Yeah, I first put out that article or something similar. I may have edited it over the years or touched it up a bit, but I kind of noticed that a few years ago and I posted it, I think, on a blog or something. But it's crazy, and Justin could probably testify to this. It's the same pattern, it's the same conversations, you know, every time I'm talking to breeders. You know, I was just talking to, I don't want to call him out. I don't want to call him out, put his name out there, but I was just talking to a breeder the other day, and he's fairly new. He's been in it for like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now. And I'm having the same conversation with him that I've had with other guys in the past. And it's the same anxiety. It's the same, you know, oh, the market is fucked and blah, blah, blah. And honestly, I think it's just, it's part of a normal market cycle. I've seen it happen again and again and again, and it has nothing to do with the ball python industry. And then you go on social media and you hear people saying, oh, it's done, it's over, the ball python market is dead, blah, blah, blah. Same comments that I've heard repeated over the years, probably 3 times, but back then it was on Kingsnake or ballpython.net or whatever, same conversations. And the hobby itself is as strong as ever. I know for me, I'm just as excited about what I'm gonna hatch out this year as I was in 2020 when we were selling snakes hand over fist. So the market fluctuates, you know, but the passion remains. And that's the gist of that market cycle thing. It's like, you know, we go through all of these ups and downs, and it kind of clears the field, and the people that are remaining are the passionate.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Justin, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the same thing. You know, it's all gets hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter as it gets stronger and stronger and more people get in. It's kind of, if you think of the boom and the bust of the of any market, but you know, I think of crypto especially. You know, I think how everybody, when crypto is like on its way up, how everybody is talking about how they're making so much money, which makes more people money in. Or you look at the lottery, you know, as it gets higher and higher, more and more people start playing, right? FOMO. Right up until people think that, wait a minute, this is headed the other way. And then it bursts because nobody wants to be a part of the downside of the market. But that's where all the money's made, is working through the downside, because when the next rise comes, you're at the bottom level of it. So we've seen it happen a few times.
The other thing that I'll say, just to Justin's point, when Bitcoin crashes and it's down to 16,000, nobody's buying it. Right. Now when it goes back up to 40,000, then everybody is buying it. People go on buying sprees at the exact wrong time. Mm-hmm. Like, now is the time you should be buying. I mean, there's some solid deals out there. Now is the best time to be building a collection, because by the time you build your collection and you get established, or if you add key genetics to your collection, when it does come back, it's going to come back stronger than ever, and then you'll be poised to take advantage of it. And that's why
the level of the amount of competition you'll have when you buy now compared to the peak of the market, the amount of people you're competing with, it's just far less. Just people are either getting out or just feel demotivated when things aren't going their way currently.
Right. And you actually get like some really good deals on some really cool projects, like in a market like this too.
Exactly. Like, now's the time, you know, now's the time, you know, to buy. But it's human psychology. And it's the same thing in every industry, every type of business, the stock market, like he was pointing out, crypto, you know, everything, you know. But now is when, if you can stick it out, that's how you succeed, right? You have to have grit and endurance. And in business, it's the same thing. If you read books like Shoe Dog, like the story about Nike, mm-hmm. you know, 95% of entrepreneurs would have quit, probably even higher, probably 99%. When you hear everything that they went through trying to build Nike, same thing with Elon Musk. If you read his biography, like the struggles and the stuff that he went through, you know, you notice a common theme, and it's just that resilience and that grit.
Absolutely. So I guess y'all talk about like how you've adapted like your breeding processes or your business practices in response to the current market cycle that we're in right now.
For me, I bred, we actually bred, I think, fewer females, but honestly, I get kind of a little bit excited when the market goes down like this, because I don't know, it's a weird feeling. When the market was really hot for the last couple of years, I was, you know, personally pretty engaged in the business, but I felt like everybody was equally very excited and very engaged. And I thought, well, you know, I'm gonna work my butt off, but everyone else is too. It's kind of like we're all going like this together. But as soon as the market starts to dip, I get kind of excited. I'll know a lot of people are, their interest is gonna go like this, and mine's gonna just keep pushing. So it's a time to differentiate yourself, you know, especially when it comes to content and collection building. And you know that, you know, during the good years, it's really hard to move ahead of others in the industry. Now it's not hard. So for me, I think we worked on a lot of systems, a lot of processes, you know. I see Ozzy did something similar with your mailing list, which is brilliant. This is the time to do things differently and think through, maybe I have a little more time on my hands. Maybe things aren't quite so busy and hot. Maybe I'm going to take and make the structure of my business stronger, so when the market comes back, I can handle with that increased demand that's going to come as well.
And you see what Justin just said. This is why he's successful, because he, when things slow down, he gets creative and start working on marketing and things like that. As far as I go, as you know, we go, I'm not changing up a whole lot. I've always been a small volume kind of breeder. So I'm still working my projects. I mean, some of the projects that I'm working, some of the stuff, if I was just breeding stuff just to sell, I kind of backed off of that, but I'm still pursuing all my projects.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And so, Justin, touch on like what specific systems within Canova did y'all focus on, and did you prioritize those in any kind of way, or was it just kind of like, we want to make everything better?
Well, you pick on the parts that you feel like are the biggest need. So for us, we are currently in the middle of a big HubSpot integration where we can take control of our customer base, which in the past we've always essentially relied on social media and Morph Market as like giant filter, like giant funnel, right? So we're advertising, we're putting our snakes out there in classifieds, and as people reach out to us, we respond to make the sales happen. But in the end, a lot of times we don't actually take control of all those names and emails. Again, like what Ozzy's doing with his email list, because once you have that customer base, you can market to them directly without having that third party in between you, be it social media, which could lock down at any time, yep, or be a Morph Market, which doesn't involve Morph Market, but they're again another person between you and the customer. And so for me, it's been a process. For us, it's been a process of saying, hey, we have this massive 10,000 plus person customer base in QuickBooks. How do we take that? How do we market them directly? How do we move them into a system where we can systematically speak to them according to their needs? So, because HubSpot's amazing, where it says, what kind of projects are you into? How long ago did you buy? What sort of price point were you in? And you could actually target individual customer types with things that are unique to them and special to them.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, that's dope. What about pricing? Do y'all find it challenging to price in the current market? I know when I look on Morph Market and I'm looking at like different projects and different snakes and stuff like that, and even with like pricing some of my own animals, sometimes like the pricing is just kind of all over the place. Do y'all kind of run into those same challenges, or do you not get touched by that as much because like a lot of the stuff that y'all are producing, or most of the stuff that y'all are producing, are kind of like way up on a different tier, so there's really no comparable?
I don't know about that. I think yeah, I think we produce stuff, you know, at all price ranges. So it has been difficult, but in the past, I'm not going to lie, in the past, it used to frustrate me to see the prices coming down. But the way I see it now is, the way I kind of understand the market now, that's just the market dictating the price. And I feel like we have a lot less control over the price than we think we do. You know, if something is in insane demand, it's the market's going to communicate that to you, and you'll know to raise your prices. Like sometimes you post something and it sells right away. It was priced too cheap. It was priced too cheap. That's why it sold fast. So, I don't resist the market adjustments anymore. And I think in the cycle that we're in now, I think prices are going to start to stabilize here, but there were some pretty significant price drops, I would say, the past, the past 9 months.
Which is part of it. What about you, Jeff? Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always trying to be, you know, in the mix with pricing. And even if you say, well, maybe I'm pricing an animal that doesn't have a direct parallel on Morph Market or in the marketplace, I still have to price it competitive with maybe an animal of equal power, because people are always still trying to choose where to put their money, right? So you say maybe no one has this exact animal, but they're still making a choice between this project and that project, which is also pretty hot and it's only this much. So you're always, in the end, I'm thankful for all the experience because I really go at it from a big point of instinct. And I say, I kind of hit with my instinct first. And then I'll say, if I was in the market to buy this snake, where would I be like, no way? And where would I be like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. And it's when I get to that point where like, I would pay that, then I can say, okay, are there other comparables on Morph Market in the same price that gives me an idea of the markets there as well, or is it just me? So there's, and then the market will call you out, like Ozzy said, you'll sell way too fast and you realize, oh, I didn't value it enough. Or you you don't sell it for a really long time. You're like, apparently I'm the only guy who thinks it's worth this much.
Exactly. Yep. And here's the thing, right? There's price and there's value. And there's so many snakes that are,
yes,
their price doesn't reflect their value. They're way, way more valuable than what they're selling for. And I mean, if I had the bandwidth to breed and add more projects to my collection without losing my mind, I would do it, you know, because I see stuff all the time. I'm like, man, that's like, it's a no brainer. And the problem is, everybody focuses on price, but nobody does math, right? When you're feeling like, when you have any emotions and you're feeling like, oh, the market sucks, the market is crashing, blah, blah, blah. If you sit down and do the math, your calculations are going to tell a different story. So there's price and then there's actual value. And then there's the price of something you bought last year versus the return that you got on your investment and that you're going to continue to get on your investment. And that's what people don't calculate. And then you'll have people making ignorant remarks on social media that the ball python industry is dead. The market is dead. The market is not dead. It's slowed down. You got to work harder, you know, to market your stuff and to get sales. And maybe you're not getting as much as you would have gotten last year, 18 months ago, but the business is as strong as ever.
Gotcha. So have some animals been moving like slower for y'all? And do you kind of like run into like maybe an oversupply issue, and how are you handling that?
No, I haven't had any oversupply issues.
I'm more aggressive. I have on certain projects a little bit. Yeah. I mean, not a ton. But sometimes, you know, I'm thinking right now of like project that I think are kind of soft and they shouldn't be, like Desert Ghost Pieds. I've not moved them like I thought I would, but they're really, really, they're so gorgeous. But I think pieds in general right now, people are kind of feeling like they're just so beautiful that it's hard to know if we can make it much more beautiful, which is actually a challenge to the price and to the interest in that project. Because everybody wants to feel like the project is starting out and fresh. And so at some point, sometimes projects can get so amazingly developed that people are like, I don't know where to go from here. But that's where I think in the end, for people who can challenge themselves to find the new avenues within a project, can really unlock it and get way ahead long-term. Because if, like, any project has a key to it, right? I think back to when, you know, before lavenders went hot, you know, when no one knew that Enchi was going to be the key that unlocked lavenders, or no one knew that spot-nosed yellow belly was going to be the key that unlocked clowns and orange dream. Like, no one even knew these entire echelons of the mutation existed. Some of those projects went kind of soft for a while in that middle zone. And I'm I think seeing, there's projects there now.
I tell you, with Pied, I'm seeing the Hurricane Pieds that I made are very, very low white. They don't even look like Pieds. So I think there's still there's always some place to take something to the next level, but again, you have to have the vision and the creativity in your breeding plans. But yeah,
that's where the reward comes, is being the person who discovers that and believes in it and then convinces the market that that's true. You know, I mean, hopefully the animal's convinced, but you'd be the one to present it. That's where the reward comes.
Facts. So obviously we don't have a crystal ball, but what's your gut feeling about like how far we are from like going into a new cycle?
hard to predict, man.
I think we're at the bottom of the current one. So I don't think it's all probably uphill from here. I just don't think it's going to boom in the very short few months. I think the election's looming and everybody is kind of, I think, wants to be the solution to the problem. So they really don't want the problem to clean up before the election. They want to say they're the solution. I bet next year it'll, the entire US economy kind of needs to change along with us for the next boom. But we're likely to go into a sustained period if previous cycles are any indication.
Yeah, so the last this most recent bull cycle that we were in, it lasted a long, long time. And I think we were starting to head for a slowdown in 2019. And then the pandemic hit. And the pandemic is like, they pumped so much money into the economy. Like it really like screwed everything up. So that's unusual. And I don't know. I think the US economy is still very, very strong. I think they've gotten inflation under wraps. And I think they're gonna have to start cutting interest rates here soon. And despite everything that happened with inflation and COVID and everything that went down, the economy is still pretty resilient. Unemployment is still very, very low. So I think the economy is strong. I think the economy is definitely going to turn around. The ball python market, you already see signs. Morph market was close to, like last time I was crunching some numbers, I think there were like 68,000 ball pythons. Now I'm seeing 43,000. So, you know, things are definitely starting to adjust. Sales are picking back up. Exports are picking back up. Which that started a few months ago. So I don't know, man. I honestly, where I'm at psychologically is it doesn't really matter. Like it really doesn't matter. I just know that I'm over here doing my thing, having fun, enjoying the animals, and you know, the market will figure itself out and we'll adapt and adjust accordingly to whatever comes. So,
yeah. And at the end of the day, that goes back to what you said about the passion. It's the passion that's going to carry you through it. So speaking of exports, what would y'all say are like some of the biggest kind of emerging markets for the ball python industry, like overseas?
Asia.
Southeast Asia. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's kind of surprising, you know, Thailand, Indonesia. I mean, a lot in South Korea and Japan too. Japan's been really strong recently. All that. It's really come alive, I think, since the beginning of COVID. It's where it really came alive.
So what are you seeing more over there? Like, are you seeing like a good foundation for like pet trade over there? Or are you seeing like a lot of folks kind of go up with the higher level projects?
Higher end.
If they're buying from us, it's probably higher end, you know, and they may be buying lower end from other people, but I've seen that they really want to get to the top and they really want to start making really interesting stuff over there to be on parallel with what we do here. So I think from what I see, they're going for it big time.
Gotcha.
I know guys that ship a lot of low end stuff over there too, you know, 300 snakes at a time. So it's a mix. I think, you know, me and Justin are seeing more higher end purchases, but I think it's a broad market over there. So
yeah, there's a guy local to me that works with like an exporter that sends like a bunch of snakes. It's not like real, real high end projects, but they're sending like a good number in terms of volume, like overseas.
Yeah.
It's the low end stuff that sustains the market from the ground up though. You can't just send high end some place somewhere. It's not going to last very long. Yeah. We need, I mean, everyone's talking about the mass producers and the big breeders who just do tons of low end stuff. Like, yeah. In slowdown times like this, it can feel like, oh man, they're making a lot of snakes, but they sustain the entire thing. They really do. They are the ones who are the entry level for so many breeders and just collectors and hobbyists of the future that wouldn't exist without that entry level animal.
That's true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Real quick shout out. Appreciate you, Justin. Appreciate the super chat.
That's awesome.
Appreciate you, Steven. Appreciate the super chat. Cool. So yeah, that's a good discussion about the market. Steven and Courtney dropped a video today from Leviathan the other day about like wheat projects versus strong projects. So they had some really insightful stuff on there. So it was a real good video. So if you haven't seen that, definitely go check it out. But from your perspective in the world of ball python breeding, what do you consider like essential for a project to be strong or successful?
That's a hard question, I think. It's so unique to people and individuals. First of all, I love Leviathan and what they're doing. So impressed with them because they're presenting in such a fresh way. And a lot of concepts that I think a lot of people overlook the education of, and they're doing it in a way that I wish I was as good at explaining some of the things that they do. So very big shout out to them. But as far as weak projects versus strong, it just goes down what your goals are. You know, if you're thinking only for like making money in the future, like from a business point of view, a strong project would be anything that is not, that's future oriented, but also has a long-term appeal to a large number of people, right? So you think like a strong project is still Dreamsicles after all these years, because you're never gonna run out of people who love Dreamsicles, right? Or in Ozzy's case, candy pies, right? It's just unlimited market. A weak project in my mind would be making something that just looks kind of muddy, but it's cool because it hasn't been done yet. You know, it didn't have any bright colors, didn't have any good pattern. Like there's a part of us in the hobby world that says, if it hasn't been done, then it must be worth my time. And some things just are, they're just, once they get past that initial phase where they're fresh and new, there's no one underneath it who really wants those. That's, we got to kind of stay away from that.
Gotcha. What's your thoughts, Ozzy?
I really, it's, you know, what keeps you excited? What, you know, I guess I'm looking at it more from a passion play, like, you know, because I feel like if you're enjoying what you're doing, then everything else, the business side is going to take care of itself for the most part. So I just try to work with projects that excite me personally, and, you know, stuff that I really enjoy that I want to make, that I'm excited to see what it's going to look like. I think when I do that, that's like my superpower, because it keeps me engaged, keeps me showing up every day and just enjoying myself, man. At the end of the day, I think that's what it's all about.
Get out of here, dog.
So there's been times that y'all have like brought certain genes to the forefront where a lot of people might have been sleeping on it, but you kind of like stuck through it again, going back to that passion. So like when you're doing that, like how do you balance? Because on one side there's innovation, but then on the other side there's like trying to figure out like if this will work. So how do you balance the desire to like innovate in ball python morphs with the risk of kind of like going out on a limb with a project that might not turn out to be a strong project?
I think you tinker with stuff a little bit, you know, you start with what you like. But I think in business and entrepreneurship, whether it be snakes or anything else, the large reward comes from having a belief in something that others don't necessarily see. You know, you have to say, maybe other people aren't talking about this, but I really think this, you know, and the market will reward those who have a really good instinct. And that's comes from many years of doing it. Again, I mean, you got to do what you love, like Ozzy said, because that's what keeps you passionate, gets you up every day, gets you excited to go in there. And there is ups and downs, right? There's times when things don't go the way you want. You got to push through those times. But in the end, you have to believe something about the future that other people most people are just, they only want to do what they see, what they, when something is proven to be good, that's the only time they become interested in it. And you're going to have to look into the future a little bit and say, I believe this is going to be good, and I'm willing to put the time in, and I'm willing to put my reputation on the line a little bit to find out if it is. And I mean, that's how you'll never know. You'll never learn to have a good instinct for that unless you've failed a few times and you've really put yourself out there. And not every project turns out great. But a lot of them will if you get a good eye for it over time.
Gotcha. So, is there any specific project that like you can think of where you kind of like, you know what, I'm gonna stop working this one? Like, is there one?
I don't think I ever stopped working with projects. I do kind of like back burner them, but I rarely give up. Okay. Sometimes I'll be like, this is not really going the way I want. So I'm going to do one clutch of these next year and I'm going to sell most of them. And then maybe I'll keep one baby out of that clutch and then wait for it to go up 3 years. And then maybe I'll have some new idea in 3 years about it. But they don't all, I mean, I think of like the Black Belly project. I bought a lot of the Black Bellies, but a lot of people don't even know what those are. Those are Black Bellies. Ozzy, remember. They make yellow jackets. Problem with those animals is there's just something wrong with them, I think. They do not grow well. They don't, I mean, Ian, yeah, Ian was, told me all these years ago.
I was wondering what happened.
I have like five of them, six of them.
Yeah.
But they just don't really, they don't thrive great. They always thrive, but they just don't thrive. And I was going to figure it out.
I really like that. I just remembered a completely different topic, but I really like that blackhead clown pod you posted. That was nice.
Oh, that's cool.
And I just stuff like that. You just don't know, like, you know, who was even thinking about that. And then you see that animal and you're like, holy shit. Like, you know, and it just starts getting your juices flowing. So that's what I'm saying. There's so many combos out there that you could potentially do to build on a project. I've put projects on a back burner. I've gotten rid of some projects. Sometimes I regretted it. And sometimes I didn't, you know. But it's just limited space, limited bandwidth, and you got to figure out what you're going to work on, you know.
Gotcha. So there's a lot of talk, like, just in the industry in general, like about like you two, the two of you influencing projects and like causing market trends. Have you, either of you ever been influenced by a market trend in terms of like a project?
I'm impressed with that. I mean, I don't even know. I take in so much stuff. It just, it brings in so many ideas from so many different places that other people are doing for me.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. But
what's that?
It's interesting, but you know, some of these projects, like when I see somebody hack something out that's really, really cool, what I get from it is inspiration. And a lot of times I get ideas, you know. Some of these combos that I come out with, I'm looking for how different genes are interacting, and when I see how they interact, it gives me ideas of how to maybe produce another combo with that particular gene or go in a different direction. So I definitely get inspired and influenced all the time by stuff that other people are making, for sure.
Nice. Yeah, it's definitely cool to like see somebody make something that's cool. You didn't necessarily think it would look like that, and just really kind of gets your like wheels turning. Like, hey, what can I do with this? What can I add to it to make it different? Like, kind of building on that platform. So yeah, it's cool. That's one of the real cool things about this, is just like all the different things that you can do with the different morphs, and really kind of like tapping into that, figuring out which direction you want to go.
For sure.
So we talked about morph market a little bit earlier. We touched on it briefly. So lately there's been like lots of like new features coming out with morph market, whether it be like the auction, the featured stores, which was just rolled out this week. Now there's the square and like the make and offer function. So what were your first impression of like some of the new features, and has any of your opinions changed on it?
Is that like a hot seat question? I don't like all things. I the only time I would participate in an auction is if it's for charity or a cause. Other than that, I don't do auctions. Some of the other features, I love Morph Market. I think it was put together really, really well. I think there's a feature overload for me. Every time I turn around, there's a new feature or a new change. I don't know what the make an offer feature is. Like, I haven't been on top of it. I just kind of use the existing features that are there. And I think it's very user friendly. But auctions, yeah, man, I'm not doing any auctions.
Gotcha. Yeah, the make an offer feature is essentially like you can enable that like on your ad, and then the buyer can come and make an offer. And like behind the scenes, you set like the lowest level that you're willing to accept, right? And so they make an offer, and if it's within that, then it can go through as like a proposed sale to you. I haven't used the make an offer feature yet. I have used the auction, I'm not gonna lie, I did use that, and it worked out pretty well for me. Justin, what are your thoughts?
I like most of the features they come out with. We're not usually the first to try things, just because we're kind of I hate to even say this, we're kind of old school. I never thought of myself that way until recently, but now all these stuff is coming out. I don't even try it, you know.
Well, welcome.
We just kind of set in our ways. We do things a certain way over and over, and we have these systems, and we don't go outside of our comfort zone very easily when it comes to that sort of thing. But overall, I'm really happy with like most of the steps I've seen Morph Market take. The site is looking better and better. It's becoming more user friendly. I do think you can have a problem with feature, bloat a little bit. Maybe it's just a little confusing because there's just too many things to do and too many angles and everything like that. But it seems like most changes have been for the positive, and I've been pleased overall. Like this new feature with the featured ad, I think it's a little clunky, but maybe you could find, these are all iterative, and hopefully they can find a way to make it something that really works for people and that looks good in the end.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I don't blame them for trying. Like, good for them for trying stuff.
Yeah, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the fact that you can give, like, feedback and stuff like that. And whether they take it, that's one thing. But at least there's a platform to give, like, feedback on, like, what you think and things that don't work and why it doesn't work and stuff like that. So if you were, like, creating, like, a new feature for Morph Market, like, what would be something that you would add?
Boy, I don't know. I think they've got most everything on there. I just think that in a way, just let the market do its thing through the portal. You kind of, in a way, you want it to kind of get out of the way, the platform. You want it to be so good and so clean and so user-friendly that it allows the market to just work and people can get the animals they want and sellers can make the sales, obviously. I don't know that more features is what it needs. I think it's in a great place.
Gotcha. You thinking along those same lines too, Ozzy?
Yeah, I think it's fine the way it is. And I understand, constant improvement and stuff like that. But if Justin is turning old school, man, I must be historic because I think one of my keys to success is I try to really keep things super, super simple. So, when things start getting complicated, I'm like that old guy now who doesn't know how to use technology. So I don't have the features I don't even know how to use. So I like to keep it simple, man, as simple and clean as possible. I'm doing I do things downstairs with the animals the same way that I've been doing them for the past, 23, 24 years. It works. So I don't mess with it. I develop a system, have a process. If it works, then I just like to, plug away and just, change gets me frustrated. But I like Morph Market. I think Morph Market is a great platform the way it is. Mm-hmm. I don't think you really need to improve it a whole lot, man.
Yeah.
Justin Ozzy said, get off my lawn.
I guess so. A
few quick shout outs. Appreciate you, Justin. Appreciate the super chat. Shout out to Ozzy for kickstarting my journey to financial literacy. It is totally changed my mindset. Yeah. Thanks.
I love that. I love that. That's
cool.
Celtic Reptiles, two OGs right here. Find a project that gets you excited, or find a project that you get excited about. And then we got Krista from Neurofi. Thank you both for your time and insight. Got my OG Canova tea on. Appreciate the chats. Appreciate the love.
You guys, if it's OG, it would say Jacob Elk Reptiles. So right there, I know he's lying.
Hey, we're going to do a real quick break for a sponsor ad, and then we'll be right back.
Peace and love, family. We invite you into the heart of our serenity, Ancestral Royal Pythons. At Ancestral Royal Pythons, we're not just breeders, we're nurturers of love and growth. Each of our high-end ball pythons is a tribute to the grandeur of the natural world and our dedication to quality. Reach out today and bring one of our creations into your home. This is Ancestral Royal Pythons. Your journey begins here.
Here's to the exciting world of ebony and ivory reptiles. From unforgettable parties and events to keeping and hatching some of the dopest reptiles in the reptile hobby, we're all about education, quality, integrity, and respect. Hit us up and see how we can help make your next project a reality. Experience Ebony and Ivory Reptiles, where fascination meets fun.
Ebony and Ivory Reptiles.
Shout out to the sponsors.
I love these commercials, man.
Those are great. Did you make them?
Mine. Ball Python commercials.
That's awesome.
I should say we did. Car helped as well.
They're perfectly campy and like charming. It's great. Great.
Yeah, I love seeing how the industry is evolving. It's crazy, man.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun making those, like going through like the different drafts and iterations. So this was the first time spoke on one. She spoke on the Ancestral Royals ones. And so, like, that was pretty cool, too.
Yeah, that's dope. I love it.
Great voice. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, how'd you guys meet? Tell us a story about that.
Man.
I don't know.
We met a long, long time ago. I think the first time I actually spoke to you, you were set up at Daytona.
Probably.
I think it was, like, one of your first shows down there or something. And that's where I got to know you. And then your boy, what's his name? Ricardo Feliciano. Yeah, he used to reach out to me.
Boy, and, I'd love to talk to him again.
Yeah, I haven't heard from him in ages. But so I don't know the exact, like, you know, back then we were just some, you know, nobodies that were just, you know, getting into the snakes. And it was pretty cool just to watch the progression over time. And, you know, I never would have imagined that we would be here, you know, 20 plus years later, still doing our thing. And, you know, at this level. But again, it was just a passion thing back then. We were just super excited about working with reptiles. And that was it.
If we could have seen some of the combos then, it would have blown our minds.
Wow. Back then, just, you know, just making a freaking pastel spider was like,
Lemon blasts, man. Lemon blasts are crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Lemon blasts. Blast stripes were 15K.
I think it was Kevin or Brock made lemon blast first. I forget. I know they were fighting about it. They were around that same time.
Yeah, I don't remember. I thought Brian would have been the first because Brian Barczyk brought.
Yeah, he had pinned first.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe it was Brian. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to go back because when I first got in, I bought a book by Kevin. And like he was telling like some of the stories about like some of the old school combos. I need to revisit that book because it's been a while since I read it. Like I read it when I first got in. And I don't think I really read it, at least not from front to back since then. But he was telling like history on a lot of the jeans, like telling some stories about jeans and stuff like that, and combos coming out. Like, it was pretty cool just to like really kind of get some insight into the history, which I think the history is like super important.
The spider jean really like created a lot of excitement when it hit the market. Mm-hmm. And that's why I still have spiders downstairs. I love my spiders. And, you know, because people who weren't around back then, just they don't understand the excitement, the level of excitement that project caused them. Like, one of my first shows when I was down in Daytona, Kevin was selling spiders. I think he was selling them for like $17,000 each. And at the beginning of the show, they had a bunch of them on the table. And I was just drooling over them. Like, you know, I think I left that show with like a pastel and a head albino male. Mm. So I got my head albino male and I was breeding them to my normal females. Boss hats. So I'm sitting here staring at these, you know, $17,000 snakes. And I'm like, man, like, I would kill to have one of those. And he sold them all. By the end of the show, they were all gone. And, you know, Japanese guys walking around with brown paper bags full of money. It was it was crazy time. So yeah. I will always have a cool spider combo. I have some Azantic Desert. I was just looking at an Azantic Desert Ghost spider that I hatched out. I'm like, this thing is pretty cool. Like my spiders, man.
Yeah, I like spiders too. I ain't gonna lie.
They make some awesome combos. They're just, you know, but again, it, like you can't market them, you know. But I wanted to make an Azantic bumblebee for, you know, an Azantic Desert Ghost bumblebee for such a long time, and you know, now that I made it, I have it. You know, I don't know if I'll breed it, but I love watching it grow. It's pretty cool.
When did the talk first start about like the spider wobble?
Very early on.
Very early on.
Yeah, they were selling for a couple of years, and like most high end projects like that, people keep things hush hush. Mm-hmm. There's a problem.
You hear whispers. Yeah.
Yeah, you hear whispers here, there, and then finally it comes out, and it was a big controversy, and it's. Like when you see the wobble, when you see them wobbling, it looks like the snake is sick. And back then, there was a lot of fear around IBD and boas.
Mm-hmm.
And IBD, you know, it gets into a ball python collection. It wipes them out really, really fast. So when you see that and you associate it with like IBD or some type of viral infection, people were freaking out. But then we just, over time, we came to realize that it was a neurological issue, and I think it has something to do with a bone in the ear or something is what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
That throws off the snake's equilibrium, but they eat and they breed and they just, you know, and then some of them, I have them that have never wobbled. I have animals downstairs that never, never, ever wobble. They don't show any signs. They act like perfectly normal snake. So I think once people realize that, then the controversy kind of died down a bit, but there was a lot of drama.
Yeah, like I remember when I first came in, it was like that one video where the dude showed like the worst case example of a spider wobble, and like I know that went like crazy. That was like, that had been 2020, because it was when I first came in. It couldn't have been like too much longer before then, and so like that's where I first heard about it, the wobble and all that good stuff.
Yeah,
that's controversy too about the super form of the spider. For a little it's while there, right? And hidden gene woma and all those, like, where's the supers? And you know, it's been part of our industry since the beginning, the controversy at times.
Yeah So have you guys ever what projects have y'all collaborated on? Have y'all collaborated on some projects?
We've sent animals back and forth. I don't think we've done a breeder alone, but I've sent some up there, and I've bought a bunch for him as well. Yeah,
I think my Desert Ghost Pied Project lineage is from Justin. I think I bought like a leopard double head Desert Ghost Pied from him a while ago or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it is, but we bought animals from each other. Mm-hmm. I never do breeding loans. I don't really do breeding loans. I just basically, you know, buy and I'll sell somebody a project or something.
Gotcha. So what have you guys like learned from each other over the course of your career, course of your relationship?
Marketing. I'm terrible with marketing and stuff like that, but watching Justin over the years, you know, I see how he markets projects and create excitement and stuff like that. And I started being more active on social media as a result, just trying to, you know, market my brand, because I will get lost in my work and I'll just, you know, I don't pay attention to anything else. We were talking about that earlier. So I had to be nudged. My girlfriend at the time was telling me to, you need to get on social media, you need to get a Facebook page. And I just, you know, it's like, finally I did it and it's been really, really good. It's a powerful tool. Other than that, I don't really engage in social media a whole lot, but I definitely use it for the snakes. And I think it's important, if you're in this industry, it's really, really important to share what you're doing and create excitement. And it's not really about, it's not just about making sales or stroking your ego or anything like that. It's also about helping the industry grow. Because I think when you show people what you're hatching out and it creates a lot of excitement and stuff like that, it just builds the market. And other people may make a sale. Like I've shown combos where I didn't have any of that gene for sale. And people are like, why are you showing it if you don't? And I'm like, because I'm sharing the excitement of what I'm doing. And if it helps somebody else makes a few sales, then that's great. You know, because this industry, is gonna, you know, fail or succeed as a whole. You know,
facts.
It's not a zero sum game. You know, there's got to be people coming in, and that's what I love about Morph Market. I think it levels the playing field as far as the market goes and the classifieds goes, because everybody needs to be able to produce and sell their product. And that'll keep more people coming into the industry and it'll lift all of the boats up. So some of the stuff that I've learned.
What about you, Justin?
I'll tell you what I've learned from Ozzy is that he just has a great market sense in general, great business sense. But the creativity side is something I think that is unmatched by very many people. I look at Ozzy and I look at Kevin McCurley, and I think those are two very creative minds when it comes to ball pythons. And early on, that really, really inspired me, especially. And Kevin is just so out there. He's got so much stuff going on. But Ozzy was doing a very curated collection, which is something that I really, you know, I thought was just amazing, how he could have a small collection, really refined, and then have just amazing ideas for continuing to deck home run after home run after home run. It's just very inspiring.
Facts. Another real quick shout out to Justin for being a great inspiration and friend. 90% of my collection is Nova stock.
That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely got a lot of Canova stock, a lot of Ozzy stock in the collection for sure. That was a good building block for sure. So what's some shared values that you think the two of you have?
I think work ethic. I think we both love what we do and we're willing to spend a lot of hours doing it. And I don't know. I definitely think that's what's given us the wherewithal and the resilience to stay in this industry for so long.
Yeah, that's there's something about doing it for the love of the game that translates. Because you're going to have to go through a lot of work before there's any recognition, and you're going to have to build a collection over a fair amount of time and go through a lot of hills and valleys on the path to success in any business. But ball pythons are a significant learning curve. There's not a lot of people out there who are, it's only more recent that people started sharing, like, I think maybe some of the keys to the business side of it, but there's just a lot of collection building and a lot of personal building that comes into being able to do this on a high level. And you're going to have to kind of go through it for many years for the love of the game a little bit. You're just going to have to just enjoy it, enjoy the mundane parts, enjoy the building parts, and enjoy the combos that didn't quite make what you wanted, and missing the odds is going to have to not derail you too bad. So I think we share that for sure after all these years.
Yeah, I think one thing that's helped me kind of like in terms of like the love of the game is getting a good group of friends to like bounce ideas off of, talk about things, give recommendations, stuff like that. And so like I formed like a really good group. So Justin, Steven from Wittermorph, Constrictors, Matt from Ebony and Ivy Reptiles, Jaffe from Jaffe's Exotics, and just like a whole host of people who I've developed like a really strong like relationship with, and we've just become like close friends. We talk all the time, like on the regular. And so that's something that's really kind of helped kind of keep that passion fueled, because like we're all excited about it, and so like we're all feeding off each other. And so that's important too, relationships.
Yeah. Super key.
It's good. Yeah, stuff.
A little bit of competitiveness is good too.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if it's friendly competitiveness.
For sure. For sure. Appreciate you, Kevin. Appreciate the super chat. Yeah, definitely. I agree. Some competitiveness is definitely key and definitely good. Friendly competition, though, for sure.
I said compete with yourself, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Compete with yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So based on your experiences, is there any other advice that you would give folks in the community about building and maintaining strong professional relationships?
For me, I just think you take care of people and you do the best you can. I have found that within our industry, it's a weird kind of mix of friends and competition, because you're selling to customers and you want to help them. It's really critical that customers reach a level of success that keeps them motivated. So you really want to help people succeed. At the same time, you are likely to be selling the same snake at some point in the future. And so it's a really, you know, unique mix in our business. And so for me, I think I find I'm trying to look at it like a big picture, but also remain a professional distance and say, like, I'm really, really, really friendly, always keep my word. Yet I realize that we're still competitors, you know, and that you're going to make some decisions that I'm going to probably think is I wouldn't want you to do, right, for competitive reasons, or I might make some that you don't, but we just know that that's the game. Like, we're in this together. We're in this to feed our families. We're in this to for our future. And we're in this because we love what we're doing, and we want to be the best at it. So for me, that's how I maintain relationships now, after learning some hard lessons early on. But I like to keep things, close, but not too close. Good boundaries, you know.
good fences make good neighbors.
Exactly.
What about you, Justin? I mean, Ozzy.
I think me and Justin, we have a different approach to the business side of things, and definitely. The way I handle that particular issue is I don't really stand still. Like, I'm so focused on like just trying to produce specific combos that if I do make it 1 year, I might make it like for a couple years, but I don't usually make keep making the same thing. So I don't worry about the competition side as much. And right now, like the stage I'm at in my career, I don't know, man. I have a different set of motivations than I've had in the past. I'm not motivated by the same things or have the same concerns. So I'm just kind of over here having fun, and I'm trying to support my customers however I can. And my advice to people is to, you know, keep it fun. Like, don't get too hung up on shit that doesn't really matter. Because I think people start worrying about, you know, being the first to produce a certain combo, or how much, you know, I think this snake should sell for. And then if somebody is selling it for less, you get all upset and you get angry and all of this stuff. Just chill out, have fun, adapt to the market as it comes. Don't have any expectations of how you think things should be, and you won't be disappointed. And if you just focus on your passion and what you love to do, then the rest of the stuff is going to take care of itself. So as far as, yeah, it's tricky. This is not a typical business. So yeah, you sell to people probably going to be competing with you in the future, but I don't know, man. It's like Justin said, like, they have to have success too to keep your industry alive. So it's like, it's always been weird. I don't even dwell on it, honestly. I try to help people where I can, and if I have the bandwidth, you know, clearly my bandwidth is limited, so I can't help everybody, but I try to help out people and just treat people fairly, and, you know, that's it. That's all you can do.
Mm-hmm. Quick shout outs for some super checks. Darren, what's good, bro? Appreciate it. Enjoy the ride and love your haters. Chris, what's good? Appreciate it, brother. I appreciate the chat the other night, Chris, too. I really appreciate the support, brother. Viathan, thanks to Mike for putting this on. Anyone else want to join Sloan and us in the $50 club? Yeah, definitely join the $50 club. Appreciate the $50 club. That's an elite club.
Good stuff.
Facts. So throughout your career, have you encountered like situations, and we probably touched on this a little bit already, but situations where professional perspectives kind of clashed? And so how have you, when you come across those encounters, how have you managed to navigate through those without compromising like your own standards, your own values?
That's a tough question.
Don't everybody jump in at once.
Like, what was the question again? Professional conflicts?
Yeah, so like managing professional conflict without compromising your own standards and values.
Man, I've been tested over the years. I think I'm better now than I have been in the past. And I just try not to let people trigger me. But there's always going to be drama, and I wouldn't even call it professional. I would call it unprofessional conflict. Professional conflict, you always work that out. Somebody's calm and just respectful and just looking for a fair solution. That's easy. You know what I mean? But it's when people get all emotional and a little crazy and start, you know, lobbing grenades. I mean, that's when it goes south. So my policies, the way I wrote my policies on my website from very early on, is to make it fair for everybody involved. And that's like walking a tightrope. But as far as the, you know, conflict goes, dude, we're making tons of money doing what we love, breeding and selling snakes. Like, why is everybody so miserable and angry? I don't get it. Like, just, you know, chill out, lighten up, have fun with it, and just move on.
Justin?
Yeah, I agree. It wasn't, it's not been as easy in the past, but nowadays I just try to take that 20-year view on it and think, you know, how many times over the years we've seen people flare up and get all upset, and how those people tend to not be around even a few years later, or if they are, the landscape's completely different, you know? And you think, I just think, you know, in the end, what matters is the people who are actually buying animals from me, making sure they're actually happy, making sure that, yep, that I'm doing what I said I was going to do and providing a quality product, and that I'm loving the everyday running of my business. And also there's the part where you're, you know, all the people that are dependent on me in the business, you know, Summer and Chase and Rob and Chaz and Greg and all these guys, like that's the most exciting part for me, is that those people all get to do what they love through me, and I get to be a part of all their lives and provide for their families too. So that's, when you get to that level, I think of responsibility, the sniping doesn't get to you as much.
Yeah, I was just about to say that's a whole different level of responsibility, because not only is like you and your family's livelihood at stake, but like people who work for you, like their livelihoods are at stake as well. So yeah, that's a whole different level of responsibility for sure.
Yeah, it's super cool, and it is something you stays on the back of your mind all the time too. So
facts. So we talked a little bit about like collaboration versus competition. So let's dig into that a little bit more. So like, speak to like how you balance collaboration with others and competition in the market.
Well, collaboration, I think the interesting thing about this business is that I'm kind of a systems guy a little bit. I'm just kind of always trying to figure out how things work. Like what's the natural state of things over time? And so I think you guys would probably relate in some ways, but it's just so interesting how many things in this business are self-leveling. Like it's like the more we learn about this particular business model, the more we learn of like how it's just quite amazing how it all works, right? How there's the base level of all the pet owners, and then there's the breeders who are making for the pet owners, but then those breeders, they want to make the new thing, so they buy the breeders who have better stock than them. And then all through the point, everybody's trying to up their game, and we're all enjoying breeding. It's quite amazing that it's not only exists, but it seems like it exists outside of us. Like it just was there. We discovered it almost, right? Like there's this perfect species that just kind of checks all the boxes. Like what if I didn't check one of the boxes? This industry probably wouldn't be the same, right? And that it's all sustainable in this really unique business. Where was I even going with that? But it's interesting to see how it kind of all works. And I've kind of like a student of seeing it. But it's in a way it's all self-leveling. Like no person can truly get very far ahead simply because they have to, are forced to sell their byproduct from their projects. Like I can't get four steps ahead and not sell all the rest of the babies that are in those clutches other than my holdbacks, right? It's just, in a way, you're always kind of like, it's this really unique thing where everybody's kind of being towed up by everybody else. And that's where this like level of collaboration comes in. And, you know, you feel, I love now in my position, I get the chance to, when I have really great customers, I get to like say like, hey, this is where I think it's going. You know, we do that through the Patreon and stuff. This is where I think it's going. This is where I'm excited about. Come along this journey with me. And that's the collaboration side. Everybody's different. Everybody's got their strengths and weaknesses and everything. And anything I can do to help as far as, you know, help their business succeed is only positive for everybody else. It's just so beautiful this business can be the way it is. And again, we didn't make it this way. It just existed. We discovered it. I think that's what I think is so cool.
Yeah. How about you, Ozzy?
I don't do any collaborations. I produce a few animals from a project and then I sell the rest. I don't care who buy it. I've sold stuff. Like, I started the Desert Ghost puzzle project years ago. I think I was the first one to make the double heads. And several of my customers produced them before me. It's all good. Yeah. Like, I don't.
It was odds, man.
At the end of the day, it's like, you know, so I'm a little more, I think, laid back in that regard. But yeah, if I produce something and I realize like another gene is floating around in a project, you know, I'll let a customer know. But I don't do breeding loans and stuff like that. That's just never been my thing. I've over the years, I watched a lot of friendships end over breeder loans. And I used to joke back in the day, I used to always say, if you want to end a friendship, do a breeder loan. And yeah, it always creates some type of tension or drama, like every time. So I don't do anything like that. Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. So that's, those are both good responses. Real quick shout out Blackheart Zydex. I learned a lot from both Justin and Oz over the years. Thanks for sharing, guys. Good show. Thanks, tonight, Mike. Appreciate it, brother. Appreciate it. Yeah. Cool. So, moving on to the next segment. Obviously, this is like far, far, far down the road. But as like we look towards the future, like, have you all thought about like an exit strategy, like, or like what y'all's plan in terms of like continuing on the company, like long term?
Oof, that's a tough one, man. I don't think that I would. I think I would cut back. But I don't know that I've played around with the idea in the past. I don't know that I would ever really exit. I love to travel. I want to travel more. And I'm just trying to create a situation where I can keep my collection and be able to travel at the same time. And I think I could achieve that now. In the past, I had some self-limiting beliefs around that. But slowly getting to where I have a lot of people that I trust, so that I could actually, you know, leave and know that the animals are going to be taken care of and looked after. So I don't really see an exit, man. I think I'll be doing this till the day I die.
Have you thought about like succession planning after that?
My kids don't want this business. So it'll probably end with me. So I'll probably wind my collection down as I get older and just do less, like more targeted. That's going to be tough because these projects, like, it's really, really hard to like kill a project that you've been working on for a long time. It's just, I don't know what it is in me, man. Like, I thought I would be bored with the animals by now. And I still wake up like a little kid. I'm excited about, you know, to see if a particular pair is locking or if something ovulates. It still gets me excited, man. So I want to continue to play around and see what new combos I could create and what new looks I can create. And I'm excited to see what other people are doing too. It's the only time I go on social media really is to look at snakes. Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe Justin has a...
If you need some other options, there's some people in the chat volunteering for you to adopt them and they'll take the inheritance.
That's great.
What about you, Justin?
I don't see an exit. I'm hoping, I keep having more and more kids, and hopefully I'm hoping to eventually have one that'll take it over. I think I'm up to five now, and the last one's the most promising, so we'll see. Okay. But no, I'm kind of like Ozzy. I want to keep doing it forever and yet have some flexibility in my life, and animal care is hard with that. you know? And so, but I want all the great side things I love about it and still be able to have the flexibility to travel. Travel's big for me too. But I think I've been working towards that for the past few years, and made a lot of progress. And I think I feel more freedom now than I did before, even though we have, you know, as big a collection as ever. So I don't know what the future brings, but I know that I get equally excited every year. The excitement has not waned as far as like, if I ever feel like the combos are tapped out and there's no further to go, I'm out. I'll just be honest with you. I don't like making snakes for the sake of making snakes. It's no interest. It's the progression, it's the excitement, it's the creativity, it's the artistry, it's all that that does it, you know. So yeah, I'll have pets. I may have a couple pet snakes but I wouldn't breed them for the business anymore.
Designers, not collectors. Right.
Yeah.
That's it in a nutshell. Exactly. And yeah, that's what excites me. About it too. And if there's no next combo, that's what keeps me going. I don't know. And that's what I love about it, because you never really hit a goal. Like, you know, like you hear about people who achieve some big, you know, monumental thing, and then afterwards they're depressed. You know, like the guys that walked on the moon. Came back like once you achieve that like what else are you gonna do that's gonna top that? So then they get into a depression. They don't have anything to look forward to. But
I drove a car on the moon. What are you gonna say? Like, top that, honey.
Yeah. So once you hit that crazy ass combo that you've been chasing for so long, as soon as you hatch it out, you're like, okay, now I'm gonna add this, reset. And this. So it's never ending. Like, the goalpost is always moving. So you always have something to look forward to. And that's what I love about it. And if it got to the point to where, yeah, I think it would be dead for me too.
Gotcha. Appreciate you, Fred. Appreciate the super chat. You are also in the $50 club. Appreciate the love. Appreciate all the support tonight, y'all. Everybody, make sure y'all hit that like button to get those likes up. Really appreciate these gentlemen coming on the show and kicking it with us tonight.
We never went to the moon. Chad with the conspiracy theory.
Oh, I got the tin hat on.
Oh, man.
That's funny. Awesome. That's what. Have y'all seen any of that stuff about that? Like, saying we never went to the moon?
I think we went to the moon. I mean, I can't prove it, but I think we went.
Yeah, some of that stuff, man, it'll drive you crazy.
Yeah.
You watch one documentary and you fully believe that. And then you watch another one and you're like, oh, yeah, that makes a great point.
Exactly, yeah.
They just go down this rabbit hole of theories and stuff like that. Yeah. So what kind of legacy do each of you want to leave on the industry?
For me, I'm on a mission to bring this amazing thing that we have to just as big an audience as much of the world as possible. I would love for it to just be something that is as many people want to participate, can, and get to enjoy it the way we do. Now, some people aren't, obviously it doesn't fit, not their cup of tea, but I think the big limiting factor right now is even just knowledge that it exists, that this amazing thing exists that we're doing. And so there's so much there, I think many, many, many years. And unfortunately, we just lost one of our biggest ambassadors for it, you know, Brian. Like, he brought it to more people than anybody so far. We need another Brian, but he's irreplaceable. But hopefully somebody will come along and pick up the mantle, you know. But that's, from my point of view, I'm not going to be that personality, but all I can do is make the art. And I think as many people we can get involved in this, it's grown so much. So I think it's been amazing to watch. And that's my mission, is carry that into the future.
Yeah, I just want to, I don't know. I just want to, at this stage of my life, I just want to touch people in a positive way. And a lot of the stuff that I talk about with the financial literacy and stuff like that, and, you know, and trying to teach people the potential that this hobby actually has in creating wealth. And I think people focus on price. They're not sitting down and they're not crunching the numbers and doing the math. And if they were to do that, they would see that the return on investment is astronomical. You're not going to get that anywhere else. And if you could do it all the while enjoying yourself and doing something you love, it's really a blessing that we get to do this. And you know, if I can help a few people recognize that, and then again, just nudge people in the right direction when it comes to financial literacy, then I'm all for it. I'm a bit of a knowledge junkie, and like right now I'm doing a lot of the health and fitness stuff and just educate myself and learning. And it's crazy, man. And the same thing, like when I did that with the real estate and the taxes and stuff like that, it just blew my mind. So when I find something valuable, when I find valuable information, I try to share it and spread that knowledge. But again, this industry, this hobby is amazing. And it truly is a blessing that we could do this, that we have the freedom to do this, but we also have a unique ability to create wealth and financial freedom.
Nice. So Stephen and Courtney got a question. So they say, what do you think it will take for a breeder who starts today to get to y'all's level eventually?
Grit and persistence. You just gotta put in the time and, you know, be creative and be smart and just keep at it.
Yeah, you're going to need to start, you know, the buy-in I think now is higher than it was in the past because the market's more mature. The more the market matures, a business matures, the more players you have who have significant market share, you know, it gets more challenging for a layperson just to jump in. But I think that a large part is just time and your ability to learn. And your ability to adapt. And the thing is there's always these market disruptions that happen, new technology, of course, new combos that we can't even achieve of yet. And to be on the forefront of either a shift in the technology, a shift in how sales are made, a shift in of how we do things, that could be enough right there to be a pretty big jump. Or just the insight into something, a new project that you had some, again, a little bit of artistry about. You saw something that others didn't, and you believed in it enough to go there pretty hard when it didn't make sense to other people. And it's easy to think that everybody else has the same ideas as you. But the reality is original ideas are actually very few and far between. There's just not that many. If you're one of those people who has it, you have a great opportunity. That over time just is all it takes. And just consistency and growth, personal growth. So it's totally possible, totally doable.
Yeah, I don't think Takara's timing could have been any better. Like as soon as you said time, she popped up Matt's comment that said time in like time. All caps. So yeah. It's like perfectly timed.
Absolutely.
Pun totally intended.
Yeah. Put in the time.
I was 13 before I was a household name in this business. And you know, 12 to 13 years in before the average person yep. saw Jacob Buck Reptiles, you know, as a leader in the industry. Not that I wasn't doing fine all along the way, just slow progression, but mostly it's self-training, right? Self-education, being better every year, getting a better eye, better at the fundamentals. And so we talk about that a lot on my Patreon too. It's like, how do you become successful, you become the kind of person who would be successful. It seems like it's like, oh, so backwards, right? but the reality is you have to become the person who would be an industry leader, not you have to do this formula of certain combinations or certain amounts of money or anything like that. It has to be like this internal drive, internal good decision-making process, and you have to challenge the parts of you that are weak. As an entrepreneur, so many of the things that you have to build early on have to be done by you because the business can't sustain it, other help. So you have to be good enough at a lot of things. And you have to pinpoint those things, be self-educating. And yeah, that was my strength, I think, is just being pretty good at a lot of things and then really consistent over a long period of time.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So one more question from the chat. So what project have you not mentioned yet that will be a good one to jump in early?
The way it's going now, honestly, is I think it's just all about combos. I don't know. I know I have like a couple of new morphs. I have the Tornado and I have the Cosmos. But there is definitely a financial reason to jump in early into a morph, but it's also rife with risk as well.
Yeah.
And so like, could you jump into either of those morphs early and do well? Yes. And some people are going to get burned. It depends on whether or not you're prepared to leverage that in a really positive way quickly. However, you could also almost have a for sure long-term success by leveraging what is perennially valuable and making it better through your own ideas. It's like jumping into the hot stock right now that may catch it on the way up, you may not, or you invest in index funds and you stay in it. You're definitely going to succeed long term, but you may not have that meteoric rise. So yeah. I don't like to tell people invest in this new gene because I just think that for a lot of people, that's not necessarily the best advice.
Gotcha. You agree, Ozzy?
Yeah, new genes are tough. They, you know, a lot of new genes never go anywhere. And it just takes time. It takes a lot of time sometimes to unlock a gene. Some things they're just amazing right out the gate, like banana. Banana was just beautiful all by itself. But I picked up something called the dark matter gene. I think it's a T positive albino type mutation. It's allelic with albino and allelic with candy. But I think it's going to have a homozygous form all on its own. Looks like a burgundy desert ghost almost. It's an interesting project. I have no clue where it's going to go. I went over to the UK, was hanging out with Gavin, and I saw it at his little show. And I don't know, my gut just told me to pick it up. So
what is it called?
It's called a dark matter.
Dark matter. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Those guys are hatching out some really cool stuff with it. But yeah, I think it's a type of T positive. Kind of like, I don't know if you're familiar with boas, like the boa woman caramel and sharp albino. You breed them together and you get a paradigm. I think it's something similar to that. But yeah, they're pretty cool looking animals and I'm just going to play around and experiment with them. Honestly, I have no clue what it's going to do, but that's the fun in it, right? Is, you know, just following your gut and playing around with something. You know, I've had several genes like that. Most of them didn't pan out. The orange dream was, probably the biggest one. So definitely the biggest one for me.
There's something to be said for going after those genes though, that are, they're rare, but people have like decided that they're not hot. They couldn't find the right fit. Initially,
they gave up. I think of like they gave up on it.
Genes, right? Like genes, like Spot Nose went through that. Red Stripe went through that. I think right now you have like Trojan is an inch. She went through that. Trojan, I think, is there right now. It could get hot, but they're just so affordable because they're in this, it's like no man's land where people don't like to invest in something unless they think it's a sure bet. If it's not a sure bet, like they're going to win for sure, they tend to like the price just gets really slips. And that's the time you want to buy it, is in that zone right there. When all it takes is one combo, whether I make it or somebody else, and it's suddenly lightning hot and there's not that many available. So, but you want to be working with it a little bit before it gets to that point.
Yeah, because when it's a sure bet, the price is higher too.
Right, it's priced into the right. It's priced in, right? The surety is priced into the morph. Yeah. You want to go where the unsurety is priced in. That's where the deals are.
Yeah. So speaking of Gavin, Isaac, what do you think about that Bang gene?
I think it's a unique gene. It's I don't think it's Orange Dream. I think it's different. I think it's a cool project. I'm excited to see what he does with it.
Yeah, I've seen some nice combos in that. We got some more love been shown in the chat. Steven
Jones. Justin
and Ozzy have been my inspiration from the start.
That's awesome.
You guys getting a lot of love in the chat tonight. I love it.
Appreciate it.
Hi Viz, I'm excited to explore the possibilities of Shrapnel, Sapphire, and Grim. There's a lot of runway there.
I think so.
Great projects, I think.
Yeah, I like that Shrapnel stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it was Corey who I saw with some of it at Daytona. Corey DeLong. It was some nice combos that I saw.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, guys. So before we let you get out of here and enjoy the rest of the night, you want to tell everybody about like anything exciting, cool, new coming up for you this year that folks should be paying attention to?
I wish I knew it was going to hatch. That's really exciting and cool. All I know is a bunch of possibilities, and I know that most of them won't hit the exact combo. So I wish I knew, but I don't. There will be something great. I'm confident of that.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, we're just starting to get ovulation, so not hatching anything out until probably late spring, but I'm pretty excited. And again, I just, you know, anybody that's out there that's feeling discouraged or whatever, just understand that this is a normal, typical market cycle. And now's the time to be scooping stuff up. There's some really good deals out there.
Any chance we might see you pop up at a show?
Possibly, if I get the motivation, you know, just not motivated to do shows anymore. Just a little more protective of my time.
Gotcha. We're going to get a hashtag campaign going to get you. Cool. Well, guys, it's been an amazing show tonight. I really appreciate both of you coming on, kicking it with us, man. As you can see, man, the chat been live all night long. Really appreciate all the love from everybody in the chat. Definitely appreciate the support each and every week. Again, guys, I really thank y'all for coming on. We're going to wrap it up for tonight, but can you guys hang around for just a second?
Sure.
Okay. Everybody in the chat, man, really appreciate y'all coming out. Have a good evening.